we were having lunch at Rira, the Irish pub in Market Square, when I told my sister that I'd been invited to deliver a Mother's Day sermon here at South Church, and that it had been suggested I might speak about our mother. There were none of the typical responses. No, that's great, or I'm happy for you. Not even, and are you nervous? Instead, she looked me straight in the eye and said, "Tell the whole story." I knew from her look and her tone what she was driving at. My sister, you see, has this idea in her head that I idealized our mother, put her on some sort of a pedestal. I'm not sure why she thinks this. Perhaps it's the positive way I've spoken about Mom in my work here as a worship associate. Or perhaps it's this oil painting of Mom that I commissioned and have hanging in the living room. It's not like I light candles in front of it or anything. And in my own defense, I'll just say this. A portrait of my partner Randy's mother hangs on an adjoining wall. Gay sons and their mothers. Enough said. So, moving right along to the whole story. It's a tall order, and I must confess at the outset, I don't know my mother's whole story. But in this Mother's Day sermon, I'll try to share the parts of the story I do know in the hopes that they'll have meaning. First, the setting. In the year 1919, shortly after the close of the First World War, and in the midst of a worldwide epidemic of Spanish flu, my mother, Esther Andrich, was born into a family of Polish immigrants. They were a close-knit, short-tempered tribe who enjoyed music, food, and having the last word. She was the second of four sisters, sisters who would grow to be the women I would know as the aunts, a group of strong wills and indomitable spirits who loved and fought through all their many years together. When she was two, my mother contracted polio and was paralyzed. The doctors told her parents that she would not walk, and my Catholic grandmother, whose primary religious devotion was to Mary, began to pray. Family lore has it that on May 1st, the Feast of the Blessed Mother, as the nearby church bells were ringing, my mother, who had been unable to move her legs, crawled from the room where she was sleeping to her mother's side and was soon back on her feet. Doctors' predictions also included a lifespan of less than 20 years, and the impossibility of bearing children. Esther grew up aware of these realities, but went on to swim, ride a bicycle, excel in school, work as a secretary, marry, and raise two children to adulthood. When she died at age 70 of post-polio syndrome, those of us who loved her felt that she had left us far too soon. But she had had her life, a life lived against the odds. These are some basic facts of my mother's story. But of course, they don't tell the whole story. Perhaps the part I can speak to best is who she was as a mother. In an attempt to begin to answer this question, I sought guidance at a local shrine of motherhood, the Hallmark store on Lafayette Road. There, beneath a banner extolling the virtues of mothers, bold, bright, and beautiful, I stood before racks and racks of cards, hoping to find just the right words to begin to describe this woman who inspires oil paintings more than 20 years after her passing. What I discovered instead was a remembrance of Mother's Day's past and how I had always found it to be a rather forced and artificial celebration. How many of us see the complexity of our relationships reflected in greeting cards? I picked one from the rack at random and found this: "A mother's love can move mountains. Thanks for encouraging me to dream big and reach high." Not my mother. My mother believed in caution with a capital C. Were she alive, she would probably have advised against my standing here this morning. In her book, risks like this, fraught with the possibility of failure, were to be avoided. In another card I read, "You never run out of wise things to say, and we'll never run out of appreciation and love." My mother was not what you might call a philosopher. In rereading some of her many letters to glean some pearls of wisdom, I came up with gems like this: "Put these brownies in a metal container. They'll keep fresh longer that way. Be careful when you go out in cars. Try to eat breakfast every day, okay? Try to get enough sleep. And you can't live on bread and peanut butter." Moving on in my search, I found a card that read, "You always make me feel that no matter what, everything will turn out all right." If my sister were here, you might have heard a loud "ha!" emanating from her pew. Our mother was, by and large, a dyed-in-the-wool, anxious pessimist who regularly catastrophized the circumstances of daily life, quick to imagine those she loved dead by the roadside if they didn't arrive home on time. On yet one more card, I found this: "Just the mom I needed is just the mom I got. Thanks for being there, Mom, no matter what." I was sitting across from my mother in my parents' living room when I told her I was gay. Her first response was to urge me to enter into counseling in order to change. When I told her I was happy and had no interest in changing, she asked, "What would you do if I told you you were no longer welcome here?" I looked at her and said with a certainty born of all the years we'd shared, "You don't mean that." She returned my gaze and said, "You're right, I don't. I'm just grasping at straws." My mother and I moved past this moment. As a wise friend said to me, "Love is stronger than the hardest thing." Over time, my mother grew in acceptance, though not perhaps in support or understanding. All of that said, have I now fulfilled my sister's charge to tell the whole story? Not yet. For you should also know this: my mother was funny, smart, perceptive, charming, unpretentious, devoted, dependable, and infinitely interested in the lives of those she loved. Though she may not have seen it, she had a deep reserve of emotional strength that people leaned on. At her funeral, I heard many speak of how they had lost their best friend and I counted myself among them. And those letters, they may not have been long on philosophy, but they were nonetheless profound in their way, if only in the way they kept coming. Is this then the whole story? The answer is still no, for there are a few more chapters. The next has to do with becoming a parent myself and the light that experience shed on my mother's story. In her poem, An Observation, Mae Sarton speaks of her mother, the gardener, and says, "True gardeners cannot bear a glove between the sure touch and the tender root, must let their hands grow knotted as they move with a rough sensitivity about under the earth between the rock and shoot. And so I watched my mother's hands grow scarred, she who could heal the wounded plant or friend. I minded once to see her beauty gnarled, but now her truth is given me to live. As I learn for myself, we must be hard to move among the gentle with an open hand. Now her truth is given me to live. Now her truth is given me to live." That line speaks volumes to my own experience of becoming the parent of a one-year-old when I was 50. An experience that I can describe in one word: humbling. Sometimes, okay, often, I end my day wondering what my son may need to say about me to some future hypothetical therapist. About my fears, my anxieties, my short temper, my tendency to catastrophize. At these moments of uncertainty, I live my mother's truth, the truth of an imperfect, messy love. But I live her truth as well when I care for him in sickness, or when I pack his lunch and include a daily note, the one that just keeps coming. When I judge myself harshly and feel inadequate to the task, I remember the love I hold for my imperfect mother, love which is stronger than the hardest thing, and take hope for myself and for all of us engaged in this messy, imperfect business of living. For the whole story includes us all and all that we bring to this day, this minefield of a day. As the Reverend Lisa Bovee Kemper has observed, for some, it is about loss. For some, it is about unfulfilled wishes. For some, it is about pure joy and unconditional love. For some, it is about abandonment. For some, it is a combination of these things and more. For me, the whole story is that we were, each and every one of us, raised in messy, imperfect love, and in turn, offer messy, imperfect love to each other and to the children in our lives. But here's the thing, the moral of the whole story. This love, messy and imperfect as it is worthy of poems, a Hallmark holiday, and yes, oil paintings. This love, which is stronger than the hardest thing, this love is what we have to offer each other in the face of illness, loneliness, death, exhaustion, loss, this love that saves and sustains us. In a Mother's Day sermon, UU minister Wayne Robinson says, "Love, that's what it's about in the end and in the beginning, isn't it? That's what we all can celebrate on Mother's Day. Whatever measure of love we received that enables us, moves us to love in return, to create the space for sustaining connections to grow. Love that creates the desire in us to give something back for being given the gift of life itself. Love is our common ground today, all days. I am tempted to say amen, but on this Mother's Day, I think my mother, true to her tribe, gets the last word. This from a letter she penned on February 3rd, 1976. Don't forget to buy some detergent. Whisk is best, but you must use it sparingly. Amen, and happy Mother's Day.